Hi, listening friend. Happy New Year. It's January 1st, 2014. May God richly bless you throughout this new year. May you draw ever close to Him. Our prayer as a ministry here at Great News Radio is that wherever you're at on your spiritual journey, our programming lineup, our music mix, our devotional thoughts, our scripture reading will always draw you closer to God and help that relationship with Him grow and flourish. Well, 2 days ago, I came across this special Moody feature called Behind the Carols, and it was so good, I just have to continue with our Christmas music lineup. I'm going to turn this 55-minute program into two broadcasts today and tomorrow, as I feel it's just such a great one, and it'll have you primed and prepared for the Christmas music in 11 more months. You're going to like this little radio drama, the way they put this together, and the storytelling that'll go behind the scenes, behind these carols of Silent Night, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and Jingle Bells. You're in for a blessing on this new day, in this new year, so stay with me for the next 29 minutes for this Moody Broadcasting Network special titled Behind the Carols.
The carols of Christmas. We've sung them for years and years and years. They're such an integral part of the Christmas celebration. And yet, for as much as we sing them, isn't it funny how little we really know about them? Who wrote them? How did they come to be? Well, during this next hour, we'd like you to join us as we take a close look into the histories of some of your favorites. Let's go behind the carols.
Ben, are you still up?
Yeah, come on in, Grandpa.
Hey, buddy, your mom said I could tuck you in. You mind if I pull up a chair?
No, go ahead.
I just had to promise not to keep you up too late.
Don't worry, I won't get you in trouble.
Well, I appreciate that. So, did you have fun caroling tonight?
Yep.
Your mom always enjoyed caroling when she was your age. She loved everything about it. Seeing the houses all lit up with Christmas lights, and watching the joy on people's faces as they'd stand on their porches listening. What was your favorite part?
Having donuts and hot chocolate back at the church.
I should have known.
I like doing stuff at the church. I feel like I belong there.
Well, you do belong there, bud. Your mom and dad have been members there since before you were born.
But I mean, I feel like I belong there because we all believe the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, Ben.
Grandpa?
Hmm?
Why do some people celebrate Christmas, even when they don't believe in Jesus? I mean, what are they celebrating?
Well, usually they're just celebrating the joy of the season in general. You know, spending time with family, exchanging gifts. Sometimes people are just celebrating the fact that they have time off from work. That's why it's important for us to do things that, well, remind people of the real reason for celebrating Christmas.
What kind of things?
Oh, inviting people to Christmas Eve service. Decorations that reflect the real Christmas story. And songs about Jesus when we go caroling.
What's your favorite Christmas carol about the birth of Jesus, Grandpa?
Oh, well, I'd have to say it's Silent Night.
How come?
Well, I love the words, but I also love the story behind it.
The story?
Uh-huh. How and why it was written.
How do you know the story of Silent Night anyway?
You pick up a few things being a church music director for 32 years. I always used to tell the choir the stories behind the hymns and carols they were singing, and somehow they always sang them better when I did that.
So what is the story of Silent Night?
Oh, well, maybe another time, Ben. You know, it's getting late.
Oh, please, Grandpa. I'd love to hear it.
Hey, tomorrow's Christmas. It's going to be a long, busy day. And I think your mom would want you to get a good night's rest.
She won't mind. Please tell me the Silent Night story, Grandpa. Please, oh, please, Grandpa.
Well, I guess one story won't hurt. And then you have to go to sleep.
Okay.
Well, the story begins in the early 1800s. In a little village in Austria called Oberndorf. Yeah, Ben, there was a church in the village called St. Nicholas, and a man named Joseph Moore was the assistant. Well, one Christmas Eve, Moore was preparing for a special service at the church when he made a terrible discovery. A discovery that led him to seek the help of the church organist, Franz Gruber. Moore braved a frigid, snowy night to get from the church to Gruber's apartment.
I'm coming.
Franz, I need your help.
Josef, get in here. What would bring you out on such a miserable night?
An emergency, my friend.
It's cold out there. Sit down here by the stove. I'm afraid it's the warm place in the house.
Danke schön.
Now, tell me, what troubles you, my friend?
The organ.
The organ?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, the organ?
Well, I was cleaning the sanctuary this afternoon, getting it ready for tonight's Vesper service, when I found that, to my horror, the organ would not play.
What did you do?
What didn't I do? I went over every inch of that instrument trying to find the problem.
You checked the pipes?
Yes.
How about the pedals?
I tested all of them.
The keys?
Inspected each and every one.
What about the stops?
Not a single stop would go. I'm telling you, that beast is completely silent. I even squeezed behind the console to see if the problem was there.
You were able to fit your body into that tiny little space? What did you find?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You're the organist, Franz. What do you think is wrong with it?
I don't know. It sounds like you checked everything. Josef, do you think it was a mouse?
Impossible. There was no evidence of any creature feasting on the bellows or making a home in the pipes.
This is a shame, Josef. And on Christmas Eve, I know you've spent months preparing for tonight's service.
That's why I stopped trying to solve the problem by myself and turned to God. I prayed that he would let me know what to do. Music is such an important part of the Christmas celebration. And then I thought of you.
Me? I play organs, Josef. I don't fix them.
You don't understand. Franz, I'm not asking you to fix the organ. Here, look at this.
Well, what is this?
It's a Christmas poem I wrote.
Stille Nacht, heilige Nacht. I'm sure it's lovely, Josef, but I still don't see how I can help you.
Franz, do you think you could compose music to go along with the words in this poem?
Well, I suppose so.
And could you write something that could be played on the guitar?
Yes, of course. It shouldn't be that hard.
Something that the choir could sing.
That should be easy enough.
And could you write it in time for tonight's service?
I don't see why not. Did you say tonight? Are you crazy?
Yes. I believe I am crazy to ask such a thing. But I don't know where else to turn. Franz, I believe God has sent me to you. Clearly, you are a part of his plan to make certain that this evening's service takes place. Help me, please. Set this poem to music.
Well, if this is really a mission from God, I don't see how I can refuse.
God bless you, Franz. I cannot thank you enough. Now, I must hurry back to the church. I need you to meet me there in 3 hours.
3 hours? Well, all right. I'll do the best I can. Be careful going back, Josef.
I will. And don't worry, Franz. Everything is in God's hands. This will be a Christmas Eve to remember.
3 hours? What have I gotten myself into? A Christmas Eve to remember, indeed.
So, Franz Gruber sat down and began to set Joseph Moore's poem to music, stopping every so often to pray whenever he felt the need for a spark of creativity. Well, 3 hours later, Gruber showed up at St. Nicholas Church and played his composition for Moore.
So, Joseph, what do you think? Is it acceptable?
Acceptable? Franz, it's exquisite. It's inspired. It's a melody that could only have come from God himself.
To God be the glory. I'm so glad you like it.
Let me have the music.
Wait, where are you going?
I need to get this to the choir. Come with me, Franz. I'll need your help teaching it to them.
In the brief hours before the service was to begin, Moore and Gruber taught the song to the choir, and then, just after midnight, before a group of devoted worshippers, the song, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht, was performed in public for the very first time. Gruber's carol is known as Silent Night.
I like that story, Grandpa.
Oh, me too.
Did the organ ever get fixed?
Yes, it did, and some believe that the repairman who fixed it was responsible for sharing Silent Night with the world.
How?
After the holidays, an organ builder and repairman named Carl Malrocker came to fix the organ at St. Nicholas.
So what did he find was wrong with it?
Well, legend has it that the organ was suffering from excess rust, the result of humidity from the Salzach River, which flowed very near the church. While Malrocker was repairing the organ, Joseph Moore shared with him the story of how Silent Night was written. Moore even sang the song for Malrocker. The repairman was so impressed, he memorized the melody and wrote down the words. For many years after, he shared Silent Night with the various churches he encountered in his travels as a repairman. And little by little, the carol's popularity spread, mostly by way of singing families that traveled the region.
Like in The Sound of Music?
Exactly, like the Von Trapp family.
Do you know any other stories where something went wrong and somebody wrote a Christmas carol because of it?
Well, let me think. Oh, there's one story about a hymn writer and his publisher having a disagreement over the lyrics to Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
Ooh, a fight? Can you tell me that one?
Well, wasn't exactly a fight, Ben. You know, you really need to get to sleep.
Please, just one more.
Well, I suppose it won't hurt if you stay up just a little longer.
Yay!
Now, this story features one of England's greatest hymn writers, Charles Wesley. During his lifetime, Wesley wrote over 3,000 hymns. In 1737, long before you were born, he wrote a Christmas song that became very popular. Eventually, it came to the attention of an old college friend of Wesley's, George Whitfield, who owned a publishing business. Whitfield had a rather controversial history.
What's controversial?
Well, the church leaders didn't always agree with the messages in Whitfield's sermons. And eventually, they refused to let him preach in their sanctuaries. Anyway, Whitfield liked Wesley's song and decided to publish it. But he made a decision that caused even more controversy for him. He changed some of the words in the hymn without telling Wesley.
Was Wesley mad about it?
Well, I never read anything suggesting that they ever met to discuss it, but if they had, I've often imagined it would have been quite a confrontation.
Whitfield, open up.
Oh, who on earth is it? Oh, Charles, my old college friend. Come in. What are you doing here?
Don't my old college friend me, Whitfield.
Oh, what's wrong?
This!
Hark, the herald angels sing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the Christmas hymn you wrote.
Well, I thought I wrote it. You've changed my lyrics.
Ah, so that's why you're so upset.
Upset doesn't begin to describe it. I'm enraged.
You're about to lose your wits.
Oh, don't mock me, Whitfield. You've completely changed the meaning of my song.
Oh, now, Charles, I wouldn't say that.
Oh.
Besides, do you think that anyone would have understood your first line?
Why? What was wrong with it?
Well, let's see if I can recall it. Ah, yes. Hark, how all the welkin rings. Glory to the King of Kings.
I thought it was an inspired opening.
Perhaps, but the word welkin? I mean, Charles.
What about it?
Do you really think that anyone would know what it means?
Anyone with half an ounce of education. Do you know what it means?
Something to do with heaven, I believe.
Literally, welkin means the vault of heaven. In the context of the song, it means that when the vault of heaven makes a loud proclamation, the complete power of the king is made obvious to everyone.
An inspiring idea, to be sure, Charles,
mm-hmm.
But when you use a word like welkin, I'm afraid it's not a recognizable word to anyone but a theologian.
Oh, nonsense, Whitfield. Mm. I chose that word because it offers such a precise description of the events in the Bible. But your revisions, well, it doesn't even make sense anymore.
How so?
Well, let's examine your change, shall we?
All right.
Hark, the herald angels sing. A specific reference to angels singing, do you agree?
Yes.
Now, let's examine Luke 2, verse 13, shall we?
Give me a moment, I'll get my Bible.
Oh, don't bother, I have it memorized. A great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men on whom his favor rests." Do you hear anything about singing angels in that verse, George?
Well, not in so many words, but...
But that's just it! Those are the words, the very words that God has given us. The Bible is the only accurate record we have of these events. We have no right to revise history so that the masses can find a hymn more hospitable. You have changed the words of my song without my permission, and I cannot accept that.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
I shall never acquiesce to the changes you have made, and I shall certainly never sing them.
But, Charles...
And as far as I'm concerned, my original lyrics are the only version.
No, wait, Charles.
Good day, Mr. Whitfield.
Good day to you, Mr. Wesley.
Well, Wesley was true to his word. he never sang the revised version that Whitfield published.
But we sing it Whitfield's way today, right?
Well, the idea of singing angels soon found its way into other hymns, as well as all forms of art and literature. And then, in 1855, a composer named William Cummings combined Whitfield's version of the lyrics with a melody written by the famous composer Felix Mendelssohn. And this arrangement was published in a Methodist hymnal 2 years later and quickly became a hit. And by the late 1860s, Hark the Herald Angels Sing was one of the world's most popular carols.
Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies. With angelic host proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem.
Of peace, hail the Son of righteousness, light and life to all he brings, risen with healing in his wings.
Mild he lays his glory by, born that man no more may die, born to raise the sons of earth, born to give the second birth.
Grandpa?
Hmm?
How come we don't sing Easter carols or Thanksgiving carols or Fourth of July carols?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. Well, we don't call those songs carols, but there are anthems associated with those holidays. In fact, did you know that one of the most popular Christmas songs of all time was actually written for Thanksgiving?
Really? Which one?
How about if I tell you the story and you try and guess?
Okay.
All right. Now, this story takes place in a little church in Medford, Massachusetts in the mid-1800s, where a James Pierpont was the choir director. In 1840, Pierpont was asked to write a song for the upcoming Thanksgiving service. Now, at first, he had trouble thinking of anything, but then a series of events led him to the home of Mrs. Otis Waterman, the owner of the only piano in Medford.
Good day, Mrs. Waterman.
Mr. Pierpont, how nice to see you.
I'm terribly sorry to bother you.
Oh, it's no bother. What can I do for you?
Well, you see, I have this song in my head. And
you'd like to hear how it sounds on the piano? Of course. Come on in.
I apologize for just popping in without any warning.
Oh, it's quite all right, I assure you. I'm accustomed to having visitors drop by. It comes with the territory when you own the only piano in town. Let me hang up your coat.
Oh, thank you. You see, I was looking out our window at home. I saw some boys racing their sleds down the hill across the street. I was reminded of the sled races we used to have when I was a boy. And suddenly, this melody started playing in my head. I just felt I needed to get it to a piano and try it out.
Well, please, sit down and play. I'm eager to hear this ditty.
So am I. Oh, let's see.
Mr. Pierpont, that's delightful.
Do you really think so?
Oh, yes. That is a cheerful little jingle you've come up with.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say so. I was asked to write a song for the Thanksgiving service at church. I'm thinking of using this one.
Oh, it's ideal. It's such a happy melody, so in keeping with the season.
Could I ask you to let me stay here and work on it a little more?
Of course. I'm just in the other room polishing the silver. Please, come get me if there's anything you need.
Thank you, Mrs. Waterman.
Well, Pierpont continued perfecting his melody. He reflected on the afternoon sled race and blended that with his recollections of racing horse-drawn sleighs as a youth. And the song he eventually came up with was...
Jingle Bells!
Well, not really.
What do you mean?
Well, at first, the song was called One Horse Open Sleigh.
But it became Jingle Bells, right?
Yes.
Then I win.
All right, I guess I have to give it to
you.
Yes! Anyway, Pierpont taught his song to the choir at the Medford Church in preparation for the Thanksgiving service. And remember, this was around the mid-1800s, and at that time, Thanksgiving was the biggest holiday in New England. And as a result, the church was packed to the rafters when the choir sang One Horse Open Sleigh.
Which became Jingle Bells.
Right, right. Well, the song was such a hit, Pierpont was asked to have the choir perform it again at the Christmas service. And there were many visitors at the church that December 25th, and they all loved One Horse Open Sleigh.
Which became Jingle Bells.
Oh, I'm getting your point, Ben. I'm getting it. And those visitors brought the song back to their own communities, sharing it as that Christmas song they had heard over in Medford. Well, soon its popularity spread throughout New England and eventually the entire country. And that's how Pierpont's Thanksgiving song became one of the most beloved Christmas songs of all time. And the song, which is not a traditional Christmas carol, was written for a church service.
Out of time, this 55-minute special I'm breaking into two broadcasts, so we'll continue where we're leaving off today, and you'll hear the remainder tomorrow on the Thursday edition of Mark and Friends. Joey Kroll will be moved to Friday so that I can broadcast this special 2 days in a row. I think it's just so creative how they put it together, talking about Silent Night, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Jingle Bells, and what went into penning these lyrics, some of the behind-the-scenes stories, and the unique reasons why they were written. If you missed a portion of today's broadcast, it is archived at greatnewsradio.org, and look for the title Behind the Carols. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. God's very best to you on this new day in this new year, and may you continue to be a part of our growing radio listening family throughout all of 2014. God's very best to you, and Happy New Year.